No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's episode 166, and one game is in the books for the Arizona Cardinals. It's not the happiest of games as they come away with a 35-23 loss and injuries to three different starters, most specifically running back David Johnson, who is going to miss a whole bunch of time. But I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire network site for the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox on the line with RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, real football is here, and from the sounds of it, in Cardinals land, the Red Sea is ready to jump ship already. Almost ready to jump ship, that is.
Are we sure the season started? Are we sure that was the first game? Can we have a do-over? Do we get a mulligan?
Well, kind of. I mean, look, the Rams are atop of the division, went 1-0. So everyone else is 0-1. So I guess probably, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's not really a mulligan, but pretty much everyone took an L to start with. So that's where we start off. The Arizona Cardinals are 0-1, as are the Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers. But the LA Rams looked impressive in a complete demolition and dismantling of the Indianapolis Colts, who are the Arizona Cardinals' next opponent. This episode 166 is going to be primarily about David Johnson. But that's the first thing we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about David Johnson and his losses. The news came out. Well, we saw the injury on Sunday. He injured his wrist. They were worried, and it was exactly what everyone worried. It's a dislocated wrist. Needs surgery. That will happen this week. He's been placed on injured reserve, and he is out 2 to 3 months, with Bruce Arians saying on SiriusXM radio that hopefully by Christmas, so hopefully week 16, he's back on the field, ready to play, and ultimately what could be a playoff run. So we'll talk about David Johnson, the impact, the injury, and the impact, and what do they have looking for. We're going to look at the loss the Cardinals took to the Detroit Lions. What are things that stood out, good and bad, from a game that was disappointing in a lot of ways? And then we're going to look ahead to week two. They will head on the road again to the Indianapolis Colts, play a team they should beat, a team that looks like a very, very big miss. So that's what we're going to start with today. Seth, let's talk about David Johnson. The thing with David Johnson is that we know how long he's going to be out. What we're going to saw, what, how big a loss of it, how devastating is it, and is the season over? Because that's what kind of a lot of people feel like right now.
You know, and that's the thing, is while he was the key to what we expected the offense to be, you know, a very good offense, it's not the end of the world. And I know most people are going to be surprised that I say that, but you know, when you look at this team, the way they were built was going to be off of, in my opinion, I've said all along that the way they were going to win games was with defense and slowing the game down and running the ball and then taking those big shots that Arians loves so much. That happened for most of the game on Sunday. And why did they lose? Well, they literally could not hit any of those big shots that they like to take down the field. Whether it was Palmer or whether it was, you know, the receivers dropping the ball, running wrong routes, the offensive line was was putrid. All of that factored into the fact that they couldn't hit the big plays to kind of deliver the knockout blow. And so, you know, let's not sugarcoat it. While David Johnson is absolutely fantastic, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that, it wasn't like he was completely dominating the game running the ball on Sunday. It wasn't like he was putting up huge numbers on Sunday running the football. So they were in a good spot, and I just think it comes down to, will Bruce Arians be willing to continue to utilize the run game as much as he did last year when he had David Johnson?
And for me, it's not – I mean, obviously, this is a huge blow. You can't understate the importance of David Johnson, this offense, because he's a guy who last year accounted for, what was it, more than one-third of the Cardinals' total offense, nearly 40% of their touchdowns, of their scores, and suddenly you're taking him away. And the offense was built to feature him. To feed him the ball, give him as many touches as possible. So clearly, things have to change. That said, I don't think his loss in terms of, like, personally, I don't think losing him in terms of chances for the postseason, I don't think it changes much, especially at this point in the season, because of a couple of things. And we just have to look back. And this is not to disparage David Johnson, because if you look at the last year, David Johnson became a star, and the Cardinals still didn't win games. Now, obvious, it's not like David Johnson won them ball games. He was – now, you could make the argument that had they not had David Johnson, they would have won fewer games. But he didn't make them a playoff team by himself as it was. And the running back position as irreplaceable in terms of total production as David Johnson could be, the running back position is a very replaceable position. And so I look to previous years. I look to 2014. They won without David Johnson. They won games without Carson Palmer, and they won games with an Andre Ellington that was playing on mostly one foot all season. It requires other things to happen. So it just makes things, for me, it makes things more difficult, but I don't think it's devastating at all, especially if they can get good production out of a group of players like a Kerwin Williams, Andre Ellington, and now Chris Johnson, who has since re-signed with the Cardinals. And so for me, I think they can still achieve every bit of their goals. And as a benefit, should they achieve those things and make it to the playoffs, potentially David Johnson is back with fresh legs for that final haul, which could be beneficial in that way. How do you see the running game working or the rotation working? You talked about with me on off the air about how, where you looked into what we probably will see. And what's your thoughts on that? How the running game will look, how the rotation will look, how they'll do offensively?
I think it'll be close to what we saw at the back end of 2013, where, you know, we really saw the emergence of Andre Ellington. And I went back and looked, because I felt like Ellington carried the ball a lot more than he did. But he averaged right around 11 carries a game and 3.5 catches a game. So let's just call it 15 touches a game for easy sake. And then they still had Rashard Mendenhall, who was, you know, at that point, 3.2 Rashard Mendenhall. I mean, that's what he averaged in yards per carry. So let's not say that Rashard Mendenhall being on the field, you know, struck fear in anybody defensively. Yet he still got 16 carries a game. So it didn't matter to Bruce Arians that he basically ran Rashard Mendenhall into a brick wall every down. He was going to make sure Mendenhall was the guy that was carrying the ball, and then they'd use Ellington in specific situations and specific opportunities. I think that is what you're going to see here. And you know, oddly enough, one of those guys hasn't changed. I think Kerwin Williams gets the first crack of those, you know, 14 to 16, 15 to 17 carries a game. From there, I think they're going to try to get Ellington back into that, you know, eight to 10, maybe 12 carries a game role. And then they're going to look to get him, you know, the catches, because that's the main thing that's going to be lost here, is that David Johnson averaged 7.5 targets a game. So they're going to have, they're, you know, he averaged 5 catches a game. They're going to have somebody catch the ball out of the backfield. They can't just completely disregard that function of their offense. That's not Kerwin Williams. He hasn't done that in his career. Ellington has. So, you know, I think Ellington gets back to his 15 touches a game, you know, maybe 10 carries and 5 receptions. And I think Elijah Penny kind of takes on that Stephon Taylor role, where he's going to get 2 to 3 carries a game, short yardage situation, goal line situations, just kind of situations where, okay, maybe we don't want to use Kerwin and Ellington's maybe not the best fit. Those could go to Chris Johnson as well, now that he's back in the fold. But I really think with Johnson, he's here just in case Kerwin fails. When you look at, you know, again, that 2013, Mendenhall and Johnson are kind of similar in what they are in that iteration. You know, Mendenhall had no juice left in his legs. He couldn't bounce things like he used to. He wasn't able to explode through holes anymore. But if there was 3 yards there, he was going to get you 3 yards. If there was 5 yards there, he'd get you 5 yards. If there's 1 yard there, well, he's going to get you 1 yard. And I think that's what Chris Johnson is right now. He's not a guy that's going to be explosive and break big long runs, but he is a guy that can take the 3.5-4 yards and get those every single time. And for that, I think you're comfortable. I think you're okay with that. Again, but that's only if Kerwin fails. And as I talked to you about before the show started, your biggest concern with Kerwin is that he's just never done it in the NFL. You know, I believe he's been around since, I think it's 2013. And then he's been, you know, active with the Cardinals in 14 and 15 and 16. And he's had more than 15 carries 3 times in his career. He's had double digit carries 4 times in his career. So this isn't a guy that has shown that he can carry the ball 16 times a game for, you know, the next 15 games. So that's the one, you know, big concern when it comes to Kerwin, is can he carry the load, quote unquote, of this team's running game, and can he be the guy that does it?
And for me, Andre Ellington becomes the X factor here, because if we recall, Andre Ellington was David Johnson before David Johnson. Andre Ellington was the guy who was going to get 25 to 30 carries a game, touches a game. That's not going to happen. He's proven he can't handle that load. But it's very interesting in a year where, for me, that Andre Ellington making the team was one of the biggest surprises, not necessarily by the end of the preseason, but if you looked at where he was last year and you look at the offseason he had, just how important he now becomes, because he is that David Johnson light. He was it. David Johnson was the, when he was drafted, we discovered he was the bigger, better version of Andre Ellington. So getting him involved and keeping him healthy, and if he can play that 2013 role, or even that becomes essentially, you know, you almost don't miss a beat. You do need other people to step up. And for me, the Chris Johnson signing, was more familiarity than anything. Obviously, I think he's going to get him give himself if things don't go well with Kerwin or he gets hurt. They do need someone who's familiar with the system. Chris Johnson gives you that. He's steady. He can pass block. And with Nove David Johnson in that running back room now, you need a veteran like Chris Johnson, who's, by the way, an incredible guy in the locker room, and how critically important he was to David Johnson, especially his rookie season. And so you bring him back for that. Kerwin Williams will get the first shot at things as to kind of be the bell cow-ish. That could easily change. And Ellington, yes, will do what you said, but I think his role becomes very important as turn the production. And then when they signed DJ Foster, I think he's a stash player right now. He might end up being the returner. That's not showing up on the depth chart right now. He might end up returning, being a return specialist, especially if they want to make sure that Kerwin Williams does not get hurt. But he's also a player, as I was telling you off the air. Remember Marion Grice, another Arizona State product, does a lot of the same things in the running game and the passing game. He ended up doing it. He couldn't get the mental side of the game down. So it was a matter of DJ Foster, you bring him in. Can he develop into something to where he can, if something happens to Ellington now, where you can use Foster in that role? He becomes a stash player for right now that they hope to keep around and hopefully develops. And, you know, maybe beyond this year, if Andre Ellington is okay or he'll be a free agent again, that they can rely on Foster next year to be the guy behind David Johnson to be able to do the things that he does. But, yeah, I mean, you look at that and now what about the rest of the passing game now? We could almost say, now we say that the wide receivers played poorly last year and David Johnson became very, very important. Maybe now, because David Johnson will not, because the running back position won't be the focal point of the passing game now, that we get better receiver play because they'll need to be throwing the ball more often. We know receivers can and do get bored. And if David Johnson is taking their receptions or running backs taking receptions, they can get out of a rhythm.
But, you know, I went back and looked because I was interested in that when, from the, you know, purely fantasy perspective. And, like, who do those targets go to? Right? Like I said, you know, he averaged, let's just call it 8 for easy math. He averaged 8 targets a game. Last game, you know, Larry Fitzgerald had 13. So that's, I mean, that's on pace for like 182. That's not going to change. I mean, can it really get higher? I mean, I really don't think they can really force the ball to Fitz anymore at that point. And then you look at the rest of the group, you know, John Brown had 9. That's a really good number for him. Maybe 10, but that puts, again, that's at 160 or 100. Yeah, that puts him at 160 targets on the year. That's a ton. JJ Nelson had 6. Okay, maybe you can add, you know, a couple targets to JJ Nelson. I think the two guys, and by the way, Jerron Brown got 0 targets in that game. So wide receiver.
Oh, well, 2. Zero official targets because he did have a reception that was wiped out.
Right. So, you know, Jerron Brown, wide receiver 2, kept off the board in game 1 of the season. But I think when it comes down to it, you're going to see a little more of Jermaine Gresham and Troy Nicholas. Nicholas had 2 targets. Gresham had 4. And I think you have to eventually see something from Jerron at that point, right? Like, it doesn't have to be 8 to 10 targets. It doesn't have to be big numbers, but he probably needs to be right around 4 or 5.
He can't be Michael Floyd.
Exactly.
He can't be Michael Floyd this year. He's got to be better than that.
So when you look at it, you know, if 5 go to, let's just say 5 go to Ellington, that leaves about 3 to 4 to spread around to everybody else. And I really don't think it's going to go, like I said, it can't go more to Fitz. It can't go more to John Brown. maybe one more to J.J. Nelson. I think it ends up getting split up between Gresham and Dron Brown and Nicholas at this point.
Yeah, that's completely reasonable. Now the question is, do you think that the offense will change? Do you see, because there's been the talk of that they need to change their offense. And I'm of the belief, if you look at Bruce Arians' offense, while they have evolved, I mean, if you recall back in Rashard Mendenhall, he's talked about how running backs aren't there to catch the ball. But then he had Andre Ellington, and then he had David Johnson. And what was he doing? Throwing the ball to the running backs as often as he can. So I think that philosophically much will change. He'll still try to take his shots down the field. He'll still utilize Ellington and the running backs a little bit in the passing game. But I think they're still going to try to do what they're going to try to do, only they have to be more effective. I don't think Carson Palmer even has to be a world beater now. He does. We don't need the Cardinals. Well, 2015 Carson will be fantastic. The Cardinals don't need him to be 2015 Carson Palmer to be successful. They need him to be the six games of Carson Palmer he was in 2014. When he was effective, he was efficient, and he wasn't making mistakes, and he wasn't forcing things. I think, especially if the defense can be what we believe they can be, that's all they need to be. They don't need to be prolific. They need to be efficient.
Right, and that's the other thing is, I thought this offense needed to change even with David Johnson because it has nothing to do with David Johnson. It has less to do with Carson Palmer and the wide receivers. It has everything to do with the fact that the offensive line can't block. I mean, they just physically couldn't block the Detroit Lions. And remember, coming into this game, the theory or the idea was that the Detroit Lions' pass rush was awful. And they really got after Carson Palmer in this game and really made him uncomfortable. You know, you and I talked about it a little bit off the air. Mike Iupati and Jared Vildier both just did not look good. Obviously, the loss of DJ Humphreys hurt more than we knew because John Wetzel did not play well at left tackle. I think you're fine with what you saw out of A.Q. Shipley and Evan Bain, but if those are your two best players on your offensive line,
you don't have a very good offensive line.
Yeah, you're in some trouble. Those need to be the guys that you're going, man, we probably could upgrade from A.Q. Shipley and Evan Bain, but they're not killing us. And now it's going, man, these are the anchors of our offensive line. Oh, this is bad. And so that's why I think the offense needs to change slightly. But again, I think it also comes down to this. If they can run the ball, control the clock, and then they can hit those big plays, because you're going to be able to get Fitz and his six catches for 80 yards. Like, that's basically just take it to the bank. You know, it's going to happen. The thing is, you can't have John Brown only catch four balls for 32 yards with a long of 12. You have to get him in the open field. You have to get him going downfield. That 4 for 32, that's what you expect from Jermaine Gresham or Troy Nicholas. You don't expect that from John Brown. You know, J.J. Nelson, we talked about it. He had 5 catches for 43 yards and the one touchdown, but he dropped a huge pass from Carson Palmer, a huge pass that he has to catch. And, you know, maybe that's the difference in the game. Maybe that changes the whole complexion of the game. And that's what they have to have. They have to have those plays happen. They have to have those plays be made. When it's all said and done, I don't think too much needs to be changed other than they just need to get rid of the ball a little quicker and take some pressure off the offensive line.
Exactly. That'll wrap up this part of the program as we finish checking about David Johnson. Coming up next on Rise Up, see where we're going to focus on the 35-23 loss. What are things that stood out, good and bad? That's coming up next on Rise Up, see Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We talked about David Johnson and the impact his loss will have and some of the newcomers and whether the season's over. We don't seem to think so yet. Let's talk about that loss. There was a aside from the injury to David Johnson, what were things that stood out? There was a loss. So let's get the crap out of the way. What were, I mean, what stood out? You talked a little bit about the offensive line. What were other things that stood out to you that were not good, the not good stuff?
I think, I mean, the obvious one's Palmer's play, but you and I have talked about this and we wondered aloud about this on this very show. Was he getting too much time off? Was it too cautious? Was it going to impact the timing and rhythm of the offense? And I think you have to say yes, because the alternative is he's done and he's not good anymore. So I think you have to say at this point, yes, like he was off too much. He didn't get enough reps during preseason and training camp. So, you know, I'm willing to give that a pass for now. But I thought the worst part of the game was clearly the offensive line. I mean, I don't want to harp on it too much. It was what it was at that point. I mean, there's nothing more that we can do about it. So you move on and you look at what else struggled. I thought the two veteran additions, Antoine Bethea and Carlos Dansby on the defensive side of the ball, they're physically just not as athletic as they used to be. So you saw Dansby get really shook on that catch by Theo Riddick at the goal line, where, you know, he wasn't the only guy that missed. Josh Bynes missed, but then Dansby missed as well. And then Bethea on the second Kenny Golladay touchdown, where Justin Bethel was kind of beat a little bit, but Stafford overthrew Golladay, and Golladay made a hell of a catch. I mean, I don't know what more you wanted from Bethel, because the guy that needed to be there to make that, to get that help over the top, was Bethea, and he was late. And I don't think he was late because he didn't see it. I just don't know if he has that range to get over there. And when we talked about this, and you made a great comparison. I said he reminds me of an older Rashad Johnson, and you said, yeah, he's the guy that's going to get him lined up, get him in the right spots. You know, if the play's in front of him to be made, he'll make it. But if you're going to ask him to range, you know, 40 yards across the field, it's probably not going to end the way you want it to. And so but overall, I think, and there's one other, and I'm going to let you take that, and then I'm just going to not say anything during that time, because I don't want people yelling at me.
For me, the one thing that stood out to me out of everything, the injuries, the offensive line, ultimately it came down to turnovers. You can't turn the ball over four times and expect to win. You take the turnovers away, they win the game. You take half the turnovers away, they win the game. They seemed to be getting things on track offensively a little bit. They had a really defensively, they were doing all right. They held Amir Abdullah to like 2 yards a carry. They really had issues late in the game when the offense gave up the ball too much and they just wore out. And so in terms of, for me, it goes down to those turnovers. You can't turn the ball over at all. I mean, so they got to fix that. Aside from that, I mean, Bruce Arians talked about how their five-star players just didn't play well enough, and really it came down to that. It came to turnovers, and their best players didn't play well. Carson Palmer did not have a good game. David Johnson didn't have a good game. He was stymied in the run game. Now, in part, that was because of line play. If you look at the Pro Football Focus stats, that one of the stats that stands out is the fact he had 23 yards rushing on the game, but for some reason, if you look, he had 31 yards after contact. So you're seeing him get hit behind the line of scrimmage. He fumbled the ball twice. Larry Fitzgerald, he wasn't bad, but there were plays he didn't make that he normally makes. Chandler Jones, he could have had more sacks. He didn't have a bad game, but he didn't have a good game, and he left stuff. He left plays on the field. Phil Dawson missed a field goal. Patrick Peterson, he played really well, except for he got beat on that busted play for the touchdown, so he gave up a touchdown. And so you look across the board, there were mistakes made by all the players that they count on to be their best players. Patrick Peterson had a great game, except for one play. Outside of that, they just didn't do that. And so I don't look at that. I don't see the game as being so, oh my gosh, that was so terrible. They looked bad. A lot of teams looked bad. But it was telling that they looked a lot like the team from last year. That they started slowly. They were rattled on the road. They made mistakes and couldn't finish. And so they looked a lot like last year's team in terms of what Tyrann Mathieu, the other guy, I forgot to bring him up. Tyrann Mathieu didn't look like he made progress in the preseason. And so I was encouraged by that progress. But all of the talk in the offseason at the beginning of the preseason, the beginning of training camp, was how he didn't have his confidence. He's almost there and finally started making plays. He was back to the 2016 Tyrann Mathieu when he was just a guy on the field. And, you know, say what you want about Justin Bethel's the play in the fourth quarter. He was really good for three quarters. He was really good. He had a bad fourth quarter. Tyrann Mathieu had a not good entire game. He had three tackles on the game. He didn't get his hand on any pass. He didn't get any pressure. He was not dynamic anyway. He didn't make any game-changing plays. It's almost as if he wasn't on the field. In fact, his main Tate, who lined up in the slot almost the entire game, Tate had torched him for 10 catches for over 100 yards. And not only that, he had 10 catches on 12 targets. Mathieu was as if he wasn't even there.
And that was, you know, that's the one disheartening thing that we take away from this, that I don't know. And maybe that doesn't make sense, but I just don't know if he has it anymore. And you know, like I said, I'm giving Carson Palmer the benefit of the doubt because we saw him come back in 2016 after some struggles and play really well back half of the season. We haven't seen Tyrann Mathieu be Tyrann Mathieu since he went down in the Eagles game in 2014 or 2015. I mean, we haven't, let's just be honest. So does he deserve the benefit of the doubt? Well, obviously you're going to give it to him, but you don't know if he's still that guy anymore.
Yeah, and they just made too many mistakes. So at the end of the game, had the Cardinals won that game by whatever means, as ugly as things looked, if you look at the big picture, a road win is always a good win, no matter what happens, and especially in week one when you don't know things about the other team. We may find out throughout the year that the Detroit Lions defensive front is impressive this year. And that explains things. If that defensive line of Detroit turns out to be much improved and be a better group than what was expected of them this year, well, then that explains a lot of the issues. As we know, Carson Palmer is not the same quarterback when he has pressure coming from in front of him. He can work with pressure around the edges as long as he's got room to move. He looked antsy the entire game. He never got in a rhythm. He never got comfortable. And maybe it was just being week one, It was nerves of a new season. It was the pressure to be perfect, because he does put a lot of pressure on himself. And so, you know, that in a one game sample, I try not to overreact. But at the same time, they had a lead and they gave up 24th quarter points. So you had a good feeling about the defense, and then it wasn't. So let's go with what's the good stuff. What are the things that you came away from that game that were positives for you? Because for me, early on, the defense was stout. You didn't notice that Calais Campbell wasn't there anymore, by the way. Holy cow, Calais Campbell, 4 sacks in his Jaguars debut. Excellent work. Excellent work, Calais. And then if there was one player who stood out to me, and that was the play of Hassan Reddick, who, stepping in a limited role, limited snap count, led the team into, well, according to the official stats, they think he had 8 tackles. The Cardinals coach review credited him with 10 tackles. We led the team in tackles, 2 for a loss. He broke up a couple passes, broke up a pass. He was just good, and that's just scratching the surface. So you're starting to see, oh, wait. Is Dale Buchanan ever going to get back on the field? Because if Hassan's playing like that, it's going to be really hard to get him off the field. And he only played, what was it, like 43 snaps?
Yeah, he didn't play much. I thought, you know, the defense, like you said, I thought that was a big plus in this game, especially the first 3 quarters. I thought that the way Betcher used guys interchangeably kept the Lions off balance and in the way he moved guys around. But then then the Lions kind of found a matchup they liked in dealing with Justin Bethel and Kenny Golladay. And they made a concerted effort to go after that. And so that's when, you have to look at things and go, okay, especially like in the red zone, maybe Peterson's a better matchup on Golladay, even though he's a rookie, at 6'3" with the reach that he has. Get your more physical, a guy that knows how to attack the ball on the guy that they're probably going to throw a jump ball to. Like I said, that second touchdown, that's just, you just kind of tip your cap to everybody there.
Great catch, incredible throw.
Right. I mean, and so you're satisfied with that for the most part. Defensively, yeah, I think you were happy. You definitely saw the age come at the end of the game. You know, like I said, Dansby and Bethea were a little slow. So maybe that means we need to see more Bynes and Reddick in there, and then maybe Baker needs to go in there and play a little free safety, or maybe Tyrann Mathieu needs to go back to free safety and let Baker play in the slot a little bit. Especially if he's struggling like he did in this game. On the offense, it's really hard because the offense was so bad. I think you're happy with how Andy Lee punted, 46 yard average per punt. I mean, that's right around his career average. That's kind of what you wanted to see from that acquisition, that late, early, right before the season acquisition.
And so from there, that'll kind of wrap up our talk of the game against the Lions in week 1. So coming up next in Rise Up, See Red, and we'll finish up the show as we talk about their upcoming matchup against the Indianapolis Colts. What do we need to see moving forward? And what is in store for the Cardinals if they win? And then just how bad are things if, in fact, they lose? So that's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on Rise Up, See Red. The Cardinals have a chance to get better, to bounce back and get well. This is the get well game. They travel on the road again to Indianapolis, where they'll play the Colts, who were embarrassed in Los Angeles and got demolished, did not convert once on third down. And basically, their quarterback play is atrocious. Andrew Luck has been ruled out. So Scott Kotulzin, who is might be the worst, he might be the Ryan Lindley of quarterbacks in the league today, might start. Or Jacoby Brissett, who will have had a total of 6 practices, might get the nod. And yeah, Jacoby Brissett. I mean, what? There's some fear, obviously, with the Cardinals going forward because of the way they looked. Is there any way that they lose this game?
You know, I talked to the guys over at Stampede Blue about this game coming up, and they're pretty convinced that Brissett's going to play. So, okay. I mean, let's just put it this way. Jacoby Brissett is a very good player. The Cardinals allegedly wanted him in the 3rd round of that draft. All of that being said, 6 practices in his first game with his new team and a defense that gave up 46 points to the Los Angeles Rams. If the Arizona Cardinals lose this game, it has, and you and I talked about this off the air, it has 0 to do with David Johnson. They're just done. I mean, I don't know if there's any other way to put it, but they're done, at least this version of them, because you can't lose to a team that just lost 46-9 to the Los Angeles Rams and that's starting a quarterback that's had 6 practices. And you know what? If they lose to Scott Tolzien, it's probably even worse.
Right. So here's the thing with this matchup that I don't like. 1, they got embarrassed on the road in week 1, and 2, they're opening at home. And there is something to how teams play in home openers. Now, maybe they won't have the same energy because, no, it's not Andrew Luck and you know, Jacoby Brissett, the kid. Those fans in Indy don't know anything about Jacoby Brissett other than, you know, they traded for him. He might be Matt Barkley. He might be Logan Thomas, or he might be Russell Wilson, except for if he were really that good, New England never would have traded him.
Right. And the other thing about this matchup is the weakness of the Colts lies in covering the pass. So if the Cardinals offense is going to get rolling anytime soon, it's going to be against a team that, you know, isn't great pass rushing, and they're starting a bunch of rookies in the secondary, and they're, you know, I don't know if they're going to be without him for sure, but I know Vontae Davis didn't play last game for the Colts. So
when I read during the preseason, he's going to miss significant time with that groin injury.
So he's not going to play. They're going to start rookies and you know, just journeyman guys and guys that just aren't good. So again, I think this is a great litmus test for the Cardinals, because it's going to give us confirmation of whether or not the Cardinals are still a viable NFL contender versus that they're kind of washed at this point. Because you know, when you look at it, the Colts' weaknesses are supposed to match up with the Cardinals' strengths. The one thing that the Colts' defense does well is, or at least in game 1, was stop the run. So, okay, well, we started off the show with that. I don't think that's going to be an issue for the Cardinals. They're not going to try to ram the ball down the throats of the Colts with Kerwin Williams and Andre Ellington. So let's see if that pass game is still there. Let's see if this is still a potent offense that can move the ball, throw the ball around. And then defensively, I mean, they were dominant against the Detroit Lions run game. I mean, they were absolutely 100% dominant. They, you know, kind of struggled against Matthew Stafford, who's a very good quarterback, despite what everybody else tells you. He's a very good quarterback. So can they continue to dominate in the run game? Because the Colts are probably going to lean on Frank Gore and rookie Marlon Mack. So that, again, that kind of plays into the Cardinals' strength, right? And with Brissett, if he is playing, you can't expect it to be too complicated in the first game. You can't expect too many things. And if Tolzien's playing, you know that it can't be complicated because, you know, well, you saw the offense on Sunday against the Rams. So again, it all lines up to really help the Cardinals and allow them to rebound in a strong way. That doesn't mean they blow them out 46-9. Like you said, the Colts have some pride, but it really does show, it does line up that, okay, we should see a potent passing game from the Cardinals and Carson Palmer. We should see, you know, a dominant run defense against a okay running team in the Colts. And we should see a shutdown, lockdown pass defense in a against a Colts team that, yeah, I know Brissett is an upgrade over Tolzien, but again, we're talking about six practices. We're not talking about 6 weeks. We're not talking about six games. We're talking about six practices.
I mean, he might be able to do 10 plays, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly. He might have 10 pass plays he's able to run in the game, and there, you know, and he knows which way to turn on handoffs. Like, that's, he hasn't been there long enough to expect him to do more. And so that's what I'm saying. I you know, this isn't doom and gloom. I expect the Cardinals to go in and win like 35-17. If it's close, you're still taking the win. You're still going to go, okay, maybe they're not a great team, but they might be good enough in what looks like a really bad NFC West at this point. If they lose, I don't know how you're not concerned at that point. And again, it has nothing to do with David Johnson. It has everything to do with, is this team any good? And I think, and that's why I'm glad that they get this Colts team without Andrew Luck right now, because I think it'll tell us whether or not, you know, this team is still good or not.
Exactly. Now I go back to, I got sucked in by how, as I think I do every year, about my expectations for the Cardinals. When the schedule came out back in April, I had the Cardinals pegged to split these two games to start the season, because both potentially were tough games. Detroit is tough. They're not great, but they're tough. And we figured you would be facing Andrew Luck. I think I envisioned them going this way, losing in Detroit and winning in Indianapolis. What will then, you know, if that ends up happening, they are so far away from being out of this. I mean, Rams are 1-0 and everyone else is 0-1. The Rams were 3-1 last year. They won one more game the rest of the year. There's reason to think that the Rams are going to be better because of Wade Phillips as their defensive coordinator. But, you know, I look at the Cardinals and I don't see doom and gloom. If they look bad against Indy, I'll be concerned. I don't think I'll even go doom and gloom then, because two games does not a season make. It becomes a trend and becomes a concern. And you wonder, well, what could they do against Dallas? But then again, they haven't had their season opener, and that could be what they need. I still think the Cardinals should win this game, even though a guy who, for a little bit of information regarding picks, he has, because I think that it's a 7-point line or something. I can't remember the last line I saw, but he says the money should be on Indianapolis this week. They expect a close game. I don't know what to expect. I think that they're going to bounce back. Carson Palmer is
I don't know if my heart can take that. I mean, I'm not even joking. Like, I don't know if my heart – and not because it'll be, you know, nerve-wracking or anything. I just think it'll be – again, maybe it's me overreacting – because I didn't overreact to game one, but maybe, and maybe it's just me overreacting to game two, but I'll feel like it's the end of this era if they lose to this Colts team. Because this, again, I don't think this Colts team without Andrew Luck is, there may be a 2-win team, maybe three.
Oof.
And do you really want to, do you really want to be that one of those teams? And so that's, I think that's where I'm like, if they lose, I just, I mean, the show next week will be solemn, at least from my end, because I don't know what I'll, I don't know what I'll say anymore.
Seth will be wearing black and mourning the loss of the 2017 season in week after week two. So let's hope that doesn't happen this weekend.
Well, I mean, you proclaimed it last year in week five, right? After week five. So I'm just going 3 weeks earlier.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. I sort of don't, the season's over, but did you also remember I got back on?
That's because you're the eternal optimist. So that's why I know if you side with me, if they do lose and say, oh my gosh, this is not good. Then I know everything really is falling apart, because you are the eternal optimist. So
I get sucked back in at the ever slight hope of something. Like, oh no, wait, this could go away. Now I don't get my hopes up, so it's nothing like ruins my world, but yeah, well, no one wants to, I don't think anyone wants to listen to two people being just completely down on a team. That, I don't think anyone wants to listen to that here. So I think we're doing ourselves a favor as well. Anything else left to bring up regarding the matchup this weekend? Players that you want to see? Hopefully Robert Kimdichie is back and that then becomes the player to watch. We saw Hassan Reddick play really well. If we see that plus Robert Kimdichie play well, ooh, there we could have ourselves a very exciting defense to watch.
And I don't know if I mentioned this to you or on the show or not, but I do think, and you hit it on the head with the DJ Foster kind of signing, but I do think there was another reason for signing DJ Foster. And, you know, remember Andre Ellington has never gotten through a full season. So they had to bring in somebody that had us. I'm not saying Foster's as good as Ellington when Ellington's healthy, but they had to bring in somebody with a similar skill set, because again, you can't just completely never throw the ball to a running back anymore. So, so you could be right. This could be we're going to sign him, bring him in, maybe see if he can return kicks. If he can't, we'll stash him on the practice squad just in case anything happens to Andre. So I forgot to mention that. But yeah, let's hope Kimdichie gets back. Let's hope Baker gets some more snaps in this game. Let's hope that you and I are both wrong in our concerns about Tyrann Mathieu and that he's actually fine and nothing is wrong with him. And so I think, you know, those are my biggest things right now. And yeah, let's hope Kimdichie plays, because you got 29 combined snaps from Olsen Pierre and Rodney Gunter. They got to have somebody else in there to put some pressure on it from the interior.
And so that'll wrap up this edition, episode 166 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about, hopefully it's not doom and gloom. Oh my gosh. Cardinals need to win this week. They need to look okay doing it. But next week we'll be back. We'll talk about that, and we'll be looking ahead to their home opener, which will be the Monday night football matchup the following weekend at University of Phoenix Stadium against the Dallas Cowboys. You can find our show all over the place. It's featured on Audio Boom. It's featured on Blog Talk Radio. You can find it on Seth's Side, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and on mine at CardsWire.com. You can also find us on iTunes. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, and by all means, give us a 5-star rating. We will definitely not complain about that. You can find us on Stitcher Radio and also TuneIn Radio as well. on social media. We're on Facebook at Rise Up C-Red and also on Twitter at Rise Up C-Red. On behalf of the show, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Cardinals are 0-1. Hopefully we're back next week with 1-1. Go Cardinals and Rise Up C-Red.